Welcome to Season 6 of the Fight Science Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we are continuing our journey of broadening our knowledge in the field of combat sports science by speaking to experts in the fields of nutrition science, psychology, strength and conditioning, and much more to help you become the best practitioner you can be. Today, our guest on the podcast is yet again our good friend, Dr. Duncan French. Duncan is the newly appointed head of the UFC Performance Institute, in which he oversees the operations of both the Las Vegas and Shanghai facilities. He is a world-renowned performance specialist, working with elite-level Olympic athletes in Great Britain, universities, and a published author with his name on over 60 peer-reviewed articles. In a nutshell, Duncan is the bee's knees when it comes to sports performance. I've invited Duncan back onto the podcast so he can overview to all of us the latest work coming out of the UFCPI, a cross-sectional performance analysis and projection of the UFC athlete Volume 2 is set to be released in the coming weeks, and this is due to be the largest and most comprehensive overview of everything we know about the MMA athlete. In this episode, Duncan will tell us about the undertaking of this massive project and give us some insights that we will explore further in future episodes with the contributing authors. This is a great episode, so let's get to it. And green light means we are live, so back for another season of the Fight Science Podcast. So it's been a little while in between drinks, I think 3 or 4 months since we've recorded an episode. But what better way to start the fresh new season than with a very special guest from Las Vegas, the new head of the UFC Performance Institute, Dr. Duncan French.
Jordy, TFD, how are you doing?
I'm doing not too bad. Not too bad for being locked up in a little room for the foreseeable future, but it is what it is. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you, mate. Always juggling, but everything's going well. The UFC roadshow keeps rolling well. It's not so much a roadshow at the minute, but the fights keep rolling. So, yeah, life is good.
I was going to say, the busiest man in the UFC, I feel like every time I see you when I'm over there, I feel like you're just doing 100 different jobs at once, just pacing back and forth.
Just running past you, just saying, like, waving on the way past. Hey, Jordy.
Yeah. I always think, I think, man, like, I'm sitting at the end of the cage doing a workout, and I'm thinking, man, I don't think I could do that guy's job. Hey,
it's not as bad as it looks. It's a blessing, honestly.
But last time we spoke, Dunk, I think it was right before Fight Island. I remember I was trying to tease out from you where UFC Fight Island was, and you told me, you gave me the hit, bring your sunscreen, and you weren't wrong. Because it was pretty bloody hot in Abu Dhabi when we went over there. But how's everything been at the UFC since then? You obviously had 2020. You had probably, you guys led the world in sports, in not just my opinion, but many people's opinion. You guys were the only guys doing live sport through that period. Well, how did all that go for you from an operational standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, good, crazy, right? I mean, when you look back, and we're still kind of facing it right now, obviously everyone's still, you know, still kind of messed up with COVID, but it was a double-edged sword, if I'm honest with you. Listen, we like you said, the UFC was the first major sports league back on, and we managed to figure out a number of ways, or, you know, the operations team and Dana figured out a number of ways, whether it was Fight Island or doing it over the road here at Apex, to keep the shows going. And, you know, some of those spike cards were like all-time classics as well. It seemed like every week during the COVID lockdown, the fight cards were just getting better and better. And, yeah, obviously we had a lot of attention on the UFC because other sports weren't going. So people were just trying to tune into any kind of streaming service, and what they came onto was the UFC. That was the only one that was rolling. So actually, you know, from 2020 for the UFC, it was a really stellar year, which ironically, of all the limitations and restrictions, it was an excellent year. And we look back with fond memories on Fight Island and what that became. And, you know, it was a brand in itself. But yeah, the flip side of it, I mean, operationally, it's been a real challenge, like it is for everybody. And as you know, we have fighters that come from all over the world to the PI. So just trying to manage COVID policies. And then, you know, we have a spate of, you know, positive COVID tests. It takes operations in a whole department offline for 14 days and contact tracing and like scrambling to figure out what the hell do we do. And yeah, it's been really tough and really challenging for the whole team in terms of managing logistics. So, interesting year, definitely double-edged, like, you know, highs and lows, and really the team should be commended, because everyone, to a man and a lady, has put their, you know, put their efforts into making sure that we're here for the fighters and we continue to provide the best service we can.
Yeah, and seeing it from the inside and going into Fight Island, even just going over when the fights are at Apex, it's crazy. The operational demand of it all just always blows my mind. I can't, it runs so smoothly. Well, at least it looks like it runs so smoothly from the outside. I'm sure there's a lot going on in the background, like with everything, but, you know, leading the way in sports, as we said. But Duncan, congratulations are also in order. Since we spoke last, you got a promotion up to a new job, the head of the UFC Performance Institute. And I'm pretty sure we started our chat by me asking you this question last time by explaining what does your new role entail?
Yeah, no, I mean, so it was, thank you, first of all. It's very gracious of you. I mean, it just means more work. It means more headaches. I've been kind of put into position as kind of sole direction and leadership of the whole Performance Institute now. Obviously, I've got my right-hand man and my wingman in Forrest Griffin, who's been there from day one and, you know, still lean on Forrest for a ton of stuff. But yeah, in my role, it's when we first opened the Performance Institute, there was Forrest as Vice President of Athlete Development. There was myself as Vice President of Performance. And then there was another colleague, James Kimball, who was the VP of Operations. James has since moved on. And we, you know, it was good to have three of us working that kind of trifecta to get the whole thing going from nothing. It was really required. But we've been up and operational for 4 years now. So essentially we streamlined kind of the senior management activities, and I moved into more of a sole leadership with Forrest, you know, right alongside me. And then obviously the team of directors have become so, you know, such thought leaders in their own spaces that, you know, that they're running the show in their technical areas as well. So yeah, my role is very diverse now, because the key thing remains our core mission, which is performance driven initiatives for our fighters and providing, you know, what we hope is the world's best performance support infrastructure. But I'm, you know, I get pulled into all sorts now around strategy, around science and research projects and partnerships and sponsorship and budget and all this type of stuff. And obviously we've got, the China facility is going great guns as well. So it's just a lot more diverse rather than just always just focusing on the performance side of things. But I'm enjoying it. It's been, like I say, it was ironic because I kind of took over this role, you know, in July, August, in the height of 2020,
right at the peak.
COVID. So it was just like fighting fires from day one. I was like, what the hell is going on here, man? This is a nightmare.
Yeah, just throw you into the burning room with a rug until you put out the fires.
Yeah, there you go.
So Duncan, the reason I have got you on is because I think it's next week, I think you guys are dropping this, but a cross-sectional performance analysis and projection of the UFC athlete volume 2 is due to be released next week. Is that correct?
Actually, we're going to just put it, it was, it's all finished. It's all ready to go, but we're just going to put it on a hiatus until after Jacksonville. Jacksonville 251, is it? Is a big deal for us because it's going to be the first, you know, 15,000 crowd in an arena. And again, UFC trying to blaze a trail there, which is super exciting. So that's a big deal for the company. But yes, here in the next week or so, let's say 2 weeks, we're really excited to be releasing kind of the second iteration of our journal, as we called it the first time around. It's a bit more of a textbook now, but yeah, exciting times.
Yeah, I was going to say, because anyone in this industry would have read it. I think it's 45 pages, volume 1, when it was released in 2018. And it kind of breaks down all the concepts that you need to know about working with a fighter. And I thought volume 1 was pretty comprehensive. And then I saw you guys putting up this post. And I think this one is like, 400 pages or something like that?
Yeah, 90 individual sections, 482 pages, 5 major parts. It's a massive kind of piece of work that, 28 team members have all contributed and worked diligently. That was one of the ironic things of COVID was when we were in lockdown, it really gave us the chance to get our heads down and write and pull together content. But yeah, it's been a massive lift on behalf of the whole team, but we're super excited to get it out into the community. Like you say, I think the first version, we didn't really understand how it would hit, how it would be received. We obviously waited a year from first opening in 2017. We released it in 2018. And it did go a little bit viral, actually. It hit kind of communities in military or in other pro sports, be it basketball or soccer or whatever. And it's like, wow, this was meant for the combat community, which, you know, it was received well as well. So, you know, that was great. And we hope that this one even more so, because, look back at the first one and it's, you say it was pretty comprehensive. And I think at that moment in time it was. But we've set a new bar for ourselves here. This is everything, you know, and the sink and in that we can think of. And the cool thing as well is since then we've opened the academy in Shanghai. So now we're bringing in MMA, true technical tactical considerations into this journal alongside our performance services as well.
Yeah, and I'm sure most people who are listening in have probably read that that first volume. And it seems like, yeah, you've just taken those parts from that first volume and you've just gone down every rabbit hole you could possibly go down and explored every concept in so much more detail. Can you explain to us, Duncan, what's involved in doing that? You obviously said that this is going on and working on this during the pandemic, but you guys were full throttle during that whole time. Everyone was doing their jobs as well. How do you go about getting something like this put together and manifesting it?
Yeah, no, it's no easy task. And again, you know, in kudos to all the team and everyone that contributed, because yeah, this was adjunct to their day-to-day, let's say, but I think at the core of it, we all really wanted to produce something that is super beneficial to our audience, to the combat community, and that remained kind of our mission on this. I mean, I think, you know, from the get-go, it was bringing everyone together and really starting to say, all right, well, what do we want it to be? What are we trying to cover? What are we trying to share? What information, what PI processes and methodology are we trying to share? So it just started with a massive round table of all our team, like dumping all their, I want to do this, I want to do that. Like, I mean, you know, this would be something good to do. It became like this, just a jigsaw puzzle of a ton of different things. So then we really started to build the framework for it. And one thing which is kind of unique to this one versus the first one, was very, the chapters were largely based in the technical areas. So nutrition had a chapter and strength and conditioning had a chapter and sports science had a chapter. What we did here was we've put together kind of a fighter timeline. So now the parts are, we've got five parts. It starts with kind of strategy and goals. And then there's a ton of sections around all the data, all the analytics, all the fight competition stats, all the injury stats, you know, all our physical stats. So all that data is in part one. Part two is now off camp. Part three is fight camp. Part four is fight week and competition. And part five is kind of transition and reset. So it's almost like the timeline that a fighter goes through. And we wanted to do it in that way because now it can become a really powerful reference material for anyone at any moment in time. If they're just wondering, you know, they have thoughts on things, they can go to their respective part, be it, you know, off camp, I want to understand what's going on. And you can pull out all the interdisciplinary components in the off camp section. So that once we got that framework built out, then it was like, okay guys, go knock yourself out, let's go and really put together, you know, comprehensive amount of content in all the respective sections. And you know, we've got some new areas, a lot of new areas in here. We brought psychology online as one of our services, so there's a big psychology stream running through it. I've touched on the MMA side, you know, the technical tactical pieces, but we've got everything from, you know, breathing training to skin infections and how to manage that through to illness and injury. Obviously COVID was part of that, to travel strategies. What do you do when you travel into competition? You know, as well as all the expected things of like, how do you get strong? How do you get fit? You know, how do you build out an MMA workout? You know, how do you manage sparring? What's the sparring intensities? How do you distribute training load? All that type of good stuff's in there as well. So yeah, it's, on reflection, everyone was pleased when they were done with it, but I think we're all really proud of it.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine the workload would have just been huge. And I think anyone that's been involved in any type of academic writing can appreciate just even collating all of the information together and being able to put it into something that's digestible is such a huge feat in itself.
Yeah, no, it's very rewarding. And like I say, but we want it to serve a purpose. At the end of the day, you know, we don't want all of our methods here at the Performance Institute to be secret and sacrosanct. Do you know what I mean? Like, if we believe in an approach and a method, we want to share it with people for them to interrogate or for them to learn and onboard in their own behaviors and their own practices. So, yeah, we're trying to get this ripple effect of elevating performance practices related to combat sport across the globe out there. You know, we want people to look at it and say, all right, I'm really interested in how you guys go about managing you know, refueling after a weight cut. Like, all right, that's a section in itself. Or, you know, so all of our processes and the models that we use are all put into this document. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and you guys are a massive data house in yourself, right? Probably the biggest, easily the biggest in the world when it's relating to mixed martial artists and UFC fighters specifically. You guys are always collecting so much data, doing so much in-house research. Can you give us a bit of an overview of what are some of the major findings, if you can put it out there, of what you guys found over the last couple of years, especially having that academy model in Shanghai, and then how you've translated that into the journal?
Yeah, I'll give you a bit of a two-phase response to that. We do have a lot of data, and we know that. And yeah, we're in a very privileged position being able to work with a lot of UFC fighters and aggregate all this information and pull it together and interrogate norms for our athlete, you know, population. What we've not done, we've done a pretty shitty job of like really disseminating that across the first 3 years. So moving forwards here in what I would call the second phase of our Performance Institute life cycle, we need to be way more proactive. And I hope everyone listening and out in the community there will see more content coming from the Performance Institute, whether it's digital or whether it's webinars or whether it's true research publications. We've all committed to saying, all right, that's the next thing we need to do. We need to do more outward facing stuff because we kind of think we've got it sorted out for our fighters internally. But again, we need to share that. So that's a caveat to all of this, is that that's coming down the pipe. So in terms of the journal, yeah, I mean, everything that you saw in the first journal is just massively updated, be it, you know, fight statistics, be it all the physical parameters and physical assessments, metabolic assessments, strength, power, conditioning, energy systems, all that type of stuff's in there. We've got some pretty cool data around readiness and some of the wearables that we've brought online. But again, we want to do a lot more of that as discrete pieces moving forwards. So I think what this volume two, what people will really see is that we really want this to be a reference document, right? We want people to use it to be able to go and look at methodologies and processes. So it isn't necessarily all about research and data. Like, that's heavy in the first part, in the, you know, strategy and goal setting section. But as you move through it, what you'll see is just a lot of discussion around appropriate methods that we implement based on the data that we've seen, and then how we've shaped our methods off the back of that. So that's kind of hopefully what people will find valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess nowadays, because you guys have been around for a few years, a lot of fighters are coming out and talking about the benefits of the PI. And every show, it seems like every show that you're on, the commentators are always talking about it. This guy talked about, when we interview him, about how great Clinton, the nutrition team, or, you know, they talk about, oh, how great Heather was getting them back in the cage as fast. Obviously, anyone that does it, all of this, you know your methods work and you can see it because you're involved with it. But can you talk to us and describe, over the last 3 years, how have you seen that evolution of putting these methods in practice and seeing the athlete develop and the benefits to the athlete?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great question. And that's actually the crux of why we're here, because we really, part of our mission statement is the evolution of MMA. So we don't sit still on these things. We know we can be better as well. We know we can continue to learn more and adapt and change and flex our methods. And I think that's central as a mindset to our whole team. You know, it takes a village to make this whole thing work. And we really have an amazing group of people that are committed to the cause. But when we opened up the doors on day one, we hired a group of people, including myself, that had some amount of combat experience, but not necessarily all from MMA or maybe from different combat sports. We wanted new eyes on a product in terms of like how can we look at it differently than the traditional approach that had been there for a number of decades, let's say. Forrest was, you know, a key member of the MMA side of things. Now we've got true MMA coaches on our team through the China Academy. So it's just been an evolution across time of trial and error, and speaking to a lot of athletes, a lot of coaches, just observations, looking at our data, really starting to see how we can be impactful. And I think we've done a damn good job of it. Like I'm not going to pull my punches. I think we've done a really awesome job in what is a pretty short period of time to be impactful on our roster of 600 fighters. So yeah, we continue to evolve and develop and find new methods and new processes. And at the heart of that is, you know, is our data, but also just listening and learning to our clients. At the end of the day, we're here for them. We're a resource and we want to make sure that we align to what their needs and expectations are.
Yeah, absolutely. And last time we spoke, you spoke about how you guys really have a mission of getting this information out to the wider and the greater combat community to be a resource where other practitioners can lean on to benefit their own athletes and benefit the athletes all over the world.
Yeah.
How are you guys going to plan on doing that? You've heard you and Clint and Heather talk about going digital and creating this platform coming out. This is a massive undertaking in itself. How are you guys planning on getting this information out to the world, to that greater combat community?
Yeah, I mean, we've started to pull together a five-year strategy for the next 5 years of the PI. And you've obviously touched on a few of the things. I mean, the world has moved into digital thanks to COVID, but we know that we've got a pretty disparate audience and a pretty disparate group of, you know, professionals like yourself. You know, we lean on you and your insights, and we share a lot with yourself, you know, and I think that's where we drop our ego a little bit as well. I mean, I think we're pretty good at saying we haven't got it all figured out, and we rely on others as much as they rely on us, because we've got the access to a large population of fighters. So I think, you know, we want to move into more, we want to build a true community. And I think I'll say that from the get-go. We know that there's a large group of people out there that have got a real interest in coming together and figuring this whole thing out and moving it forward. So we want to be the people to support building that community. You'll see hopefully a lot more of that through, you know, digital platforms that we'll be building. We're looking to host webinars, do mentorships, have the opportunity to do much more engagement with people, you know, like yourself and other professionals or athletes or coaches that have really want to tap into the UFC IP and our expertise. And we're trying to find ways to do that. The other things that we're doing is we're really looking into way more targeted geographical strategies. Again, I think if we look at certain areas of the world, we see performance behaviors, when they all come to Vegas for a fight, you know, there might be a particular methodology of weight management or weight making that they use. And we're like, oh, I'm not really sure that that's the best approach. Well, it's pretty endemic in that particular region. All right. So how do we go into that region and target the education, the upskilling, the change of behavior? So we really want to build kind of targeted global territory actions as well. So yeah, big digital initiative, lots of community engagement. We want to interface with, you know, our colleagues, our professionals, our friends out in the combat sport community. And we also want to create platforms, you know, to do some targeted efforts that we hope will move the needle in certain spaces.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And everyone's looking forward to it. And Dunk, I guess this is going to be a hard question to answer. And we're prefacing the next few episodes because I'm going to get the guys on, I'm going to get Heather and Clint to go over and talk about each of the individual sections. And this is going to be a mammoth question that I'm going to ask you to summarize. It's going to be tough. So don't give me too much grief for it. But if you were going to give an overview of Volume 2, the major kind of learnings throughout these sections, or if you were to summarize what you guys have found over the last 3 years from Volume 1, when you've collected all this data, you guys got all this experience, you've seen how it affects the athletes. What are some of the major learnings or major overviews that people can expect to find when they're going through this volume and they're reading it for themselves, going in more detail?
Yeah. Again, really great question, Jordy. And I think, you know, it's going to be a simple pocketed answer for me. This is MMA. It's the most complex sport out there. And the chaos and the layers of variability that comes into the sport alone, hopefully, is reflected in the journal. And I think that means that we've really picked it apart and we've looked at every constituent component that could potentially help or support or influence a fighter or a coach working with a fighter. And I think, you know, that's the feel that I hope people get. Yeah, you're going to speak to Clint or whoever on the nutrition side. They're going to drill down on some of the specifics that they have. Same with our medical team. You know, maybe get, you know, the MMA guys on. But as a whole, as the person that was kind of leading the charge on the whole thing, from an umbrella 35,000 feet perspective, I think the feel that you get from this is, wow, okay, they're pulling a lot of individual things into this conversation. It's not just about get strong, get fit, and be really good at your technical work. It's like, okay, how do you manage self-care? How do you look at the mindset in this phase of your training versus this phase of your training? How do you work with your family to support, you know, your day-to-day performance lifestyles? How do you, you know, strap your hands? How, you know, all these things, as this minute considerations, but it goes into this whole melting pot that is our second journal. I hope that's the feel that I hope people get, because that's the way I certainly look at it.
Yeah, definitely one of the most complex sports in the world, right? It's such a multifaceted, and you know, you're one of the leaders in the world when it comes to performance. And I'm sure you get this all the time when people ask, what's a good MMA performance? And you think, God, how long's a piece of string? How do you even answer that?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, the variables in this sport are second to none. I mean, I've had the pleasure of working with 37 different pro Olympic sports, I think, in my career. And by far, MMA presents the hardest puzzle to figure out. But that's why we're here. That's why we present this type of information, because we're doing our best to try and get the narrative to a certain point where people start to understand the complexity. And it's not just, you know, always throwing the most basic strength program at these guys and think they're going to go win a world title. It's very nuanced in nature.
Before I got into doing TFD, I used to work clinically in a hospital. And I remember when I used to go to like the rehab room, and there'd be visitors in and there'd be puzzles and the guests would do puzzles with the patients. And I remember there was always like the basic, like 20 or 30 piece puzzles. And then there was those ginormous 500-600 piece puzzles. And I always think MMA is that 500-600 piece puzzle, right? And we're just putting in these little pieces. And every time you think you're getting something, you pick up another one and go, oh wait, maybe this goes there. And you've got to move it around. And it's a complex thing. And I want to ask you this, Dunk, because I asked you this last time we spoke. How close are we to understanding the physiology and what makes up an ideal performance of the MMA fighter?
Yeah, great question. I think we're getting closer. But I think we're still challenged by certain insights that we just can't get to because of the nature of our sport. So when you look at wearable technology or really capturing information around competition, there's certain parameters that we just can't get to right now. That makes it really hard. But I think when we look at, you know, associated data, let's say, whether it be physical parameters or whether it be, you know, performance characteristics, as we see the way the fight evolves and the fight is being won, these are all proxies of success. And I think when you put the proxies of success together and overlay them, then you can really create a matrix of increasing the probability of success. And I think that's where we're at right now with the PI is like, okay, we know we don't understand the true North Star, and I don't know that we ever will, but we're getting closer. And I think, you know, your experience firsthand with some of the fighters that you've worked with, just coming back to the previous point, I mean, there's so much complexity just for one fight, right? But now this guy's got to fight someone completely different. The complexity completely changes. Do you know what I mean? I think about Izzy fighting at 185 and then moving to 205. And whilst, yeah, he keeps his body weight pretty similar for that, it's just a different animal altogether. So this isn't even complex as a generic approach. It's so variable fight to fight to fight. I don't know that there's any other sport that's like that. Yes, people look at tactics. You know, if the Green Bay Packers are playing the Chicago Bears versus the New England Patriots, they're going to change their tactics. But football is football. And yes, this is fighting versus fighting, but if you look at the styles that now, it's like the Green Bay Packers playing Liverpool FC. Like, it's like one's an American football team, one's a soccer team. It's like, that's a different sport. Like, that's what we're faced with conceptually in MMA on a fight-to-fight basis, which is just, like, it's a proper head mash, right?
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because it's like people always ask these questions expecting an answer, and everyone who's in the know kind of just gives a blank stare back, and you're like, oh man, like, I don't really know.
Yeah, I think we're getting closer. I think you know, again, there's some good academics out there producing some really good content now in true kind of research controlled studies that help us understand the physiology. We've got, you know, educated coaches and some really high level coaches contributing to the conversations now. And then, you know, ourselves working with high level UFC fighters and world-class fighters, really trying to be proactive and progressive at bringing this all together and deciphering it. I think, you know, we're definitely moving the needle for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And this next one, Dunk, feel free to give an anecdotal answer to this bit. But at the PI in Shanghai, you guys have the academy model. And I guess you guys are in such a unique position because you've been able to apply all this. You've been out all this info you guys are collating and gathering over the years. You've got this superstar team of Chinese athletes, and you can just put them through this. Have you seen how this works and how this plays out in real time with your academy students?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, that everyone in Vegas is a little bit jealous of Shanghai because they've got what we would say is the perfect model, right? It's the MMA coaches. It's a technical tactical that we employ and we manage. And then we also manage the support team. So it's a truly integrated system. I don't know that in MMA, there's many of those around. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, we can implement methods and strategies and principles and see how sticky they are, you know, see if they're effective, impactful. Do they create change? Do they make, you know, better fighters? And I think, you know, we've been open 2 years over there. We've had, you know, about 35 fighters come through. We've already graduated six into the UFC in 2 years. And one of those years was COVID. So, you know, it's a pretty good return right now. We've got some of those fighters fighting in the Jacksonville event here coming up. So we'll see how they go, but again, it's exciting. But when we look at, you know, implementing methods or technologies or things and interrogating them, that's the most optimal place to do it in China, because we can control every part of the system and say, well, okay, if we're measuring, you know, if we're looking at instrumented mouthpiece technology to look at head impacts, you know, okay, we're going to increase the training load this week, and next we're going to decrease the training load, and we can start to see how the data comes out and how it's changing the variables. So, you know, that normally that's pretty challenging to do. So, yeah, I think we're getting into a really good spot with the academy, where we've been very influential on really expediting the development of a group of fighters within that area.
Yeah, and I got two more questions for you, Dunk, before I let you get back to your Friday and start your weekend. First one on the PI and that, and I guess 2018, you guys opened up within 18 months. You had UFC PI Shanghai. It's been around. So what was that, mid-2019? We're now getting towards mid-2021. Are we due for more PIs around the world? Are there some in the pipe work? What can you release to us?
Yeah, no, I'm, you know, within the what I can tell you, absolutely. And I think, you know, we've got conversations on three or four locations potentially where we're looking to expand the PI footprint in different areas, different, you know, territories around the world. And again, that's to really be proactive at supporting a global network of fighters, right? We want to, you know, not everyone should be flying into Las Vegas. We need people to be able to access our resources on a more local level, be it territorial level. But yeah, absolutely. So I can't really go into the details of where we're looking at right now, obviously, but, you know, more PIs afoot. And, you know, that's hugely exciting for someone like myself in my role, where it's like, okay, we're truly expanding and we can continue to grow what we're doing here.
Yeah, absolutely. And last question, Dunk, what does the future hold? You've got volume 2 coming out now. Are there plans once this come out? Are you guys going to keep expanding, going into volume 3? You said you've got the digital platform you guys want to expand out. The PI is obviously going around the world. We're going international. You guys are going out. What does the foreseeable future hold for you guys at the Performance Institute?
Yeah, I mean, we're really trying to diversify what we do. At the end of the day, the core mission is the UFC fighters and providing the world's best performance support infrastructure for those guys. But we also want to, we want to promote our brand and our identity globally. We want to elevate standards of insight. We're really looking at, certification and accreditation infrastructures here moving forward. So hopefully people will be excited by that and affiliating themselves with the UFC PI brand on a academic and a kind of certification accreditation level. That's something that is really exciting for the team. And we're hard on with planning what that's going to look like and the launch of that here shortly. We're looking into different app-based things and using different media and technologies. I think one of the cool things when you work at the UFC and you're around people like Dana White and the innovative mind that he has, it's hard not to continue to push the boundaries, right, and continue to try and explore. We want to be a really valuable resource to everybody, right? We want to be a valuable resource to the fighters, to the coaches on the competition side of things. But we also want to be a resource to just the performance community to elevate the narrative of what's the best way to go about this kind of activity that we all love and that we're all excited by, we've got a responsibility there, and we're trying to be as creative as we can and create, opportunities to engage with as many people as possible.
Exciting times ahead, but we wouldn't be expecting anything less from you guys. Always, like you said, always innovating, always pushing the boundary. Now, cross-sectional performance analysis and projection of the UFC athlete volume 2 is due to be released in a couple of weeks, Jacksonville, Dr. Duncan French. How can people get onto it and get a read of it and get their hands on it?
Yeah, so what we're going to do, again, to try and get it out to the largest, audience we can, we're going to do it as a digital download. So watch the UFC PI social channels. We'll be splashing all that across there. There'll be media releases when it goes out. We'll be advertising the link. People can go to the website. We'll just request some kind of demographic information, email and things, so we can start to build that community. We really want to start having mail shops and newsletters that go out to, a group of interested folk. But it'll be a free download. Again, it's a lot of IP. I think, I get it in the ear from my team every day. Why are we giving this thing away for free when we've worked so hard on it? And it's kind of precious content. But that's what we're about. Listen, we want to provide insights. We want to elevate the standards, and we're doing our bit hopefully to support that. So yeah, we'll be promoting kind of links, and it'll just be a simple download that we'll go to.
Yeah, you guys are definitely doing your bit and a little bit more, I'd say, of achieving that goal. But I don't really want to ask you this question because I know you're busy. I don't want to add any potential workload. But if people do want to get in contact with you, Duncan, they want to get you on chat on their podcast, they want to just ask you questions, they want to follow you on social media, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the most progressive guy on social media, but I am on social media. I try and do my bit. I'm an old man now. But yeah, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm on LinkedIn, Dr. Duncan French on most of my Twitter and Instagram handles. I'm just Duncan French on LinkedIn. Please reach out. Always happy to have DMs and connect. Like I say, I'm a pawn in this big kind of machine of combat sport performance, like our whole team is. But it's fucking exciting, and it's we're doing some cool stuff, and I like to connect with people that want to have that same conversation. So yeah, look forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited now to chat to the guys and hear more, and I'm even more excited to read this and see what comes on the digital platform and just get more info and increase the overall collective intellect of it all. So Dr. Duncan French, thank you so much for coming on, overviewing this new volume that's coming out. I'm sure everyone's just as excited, but mate, I know you're busy, and thanks so much for taking the time.
Cool. Anytime, Jordy. Good luck with everything. And great to talk to you again, mate.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Be sure to tune into the coming episodes where I'll be speaking to the contributing authors from the UFC PI to break down this new volume. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.